Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We have a lot to explore. In fact, I chose not to have a guest because I wanted to share some commentaries of my own and others and ask for your feedback. You'll be able to talk back a little later on in the show. We're going to give you the latest on the omega-3 fatty acids, vitamin D, also right up there, scoring some big hits, and lycopene. Well, it can do a lot to aid your heart. And also, all that advice about the low-dose aspirin, I'm opposed to that, not because it will lessen your likelihood of having a stroke, that it probably does, but it increased your risk of having a heart attack. And now, according to Cancer Epidemiology and Biomarkers Prevention, it does something else really bad. I'll get you on that. Also, we'll talk today about diabetes rates climbing, what we can do about it, high doses of vitamin C, reducing Epstein-Barr viral loads, and fasting. Wow, it does a whole lot of good for our immune systems. Plus, we're going to have the latest on how mercury fillings can cause candida overgrowth and curcumin. A really good study from Case Western Reserve University, what it does to help your health. Also today, I'm going to share information that is a matter of record, meaning anyone who wishes to use this in a court of law or in an article or a documentary can do so, because you'll have information that is hitherto for not public knowledge, that has never been brought up by the mainstream media, but will really embarrass Big Pharma. What is it? I'm going to show you the actual cost to the manufacturer of the best-selling drugs in America and the percentage of markup they have over the cost of the general active ingredient, and then what you pay and the product. So you may want to have this, because this is extremely important. And also for physicians, I doubt very seriously most physicians would know where to get the proprietary information on the active ingredients and their actual cost for month supply. So for nurses, physicians who are listening, dentists, this is important, what I'm going to share with you. Also today, I'm going to share some insights on Gardasil. I'm going to quote a young lady on her experience. Also, 15 minutes on your cell phone will do what? Not good. And we've been looking around the world at the plight of immigrants, refugees, those seeking asylum for various reasons. What no one's talking about is, what's the real underlying cause? Today, from Scoop Independent News, from Harmeet Sudhan, will give you the actual U.S.-led coalition human rights record just in Iraq. And that's one place millions have sought to get out of. Also, we have absolute proof that the neocons, including those in special, let's say, highly recognized and respected think tanks, in this case, the Brookings Institute, planned to liquidate Syria. Mike Whitney on that. And here's what I saw in a California town without running water. Thanks to the drought, many people in East Portersville cannot cook, cannot shower, cannot flush the toilet at home. Julie Lurie on that. The real enemy is within, Chris Hedges from Truthdig. Let's begin. First up, we're going to talk about the omega-3 fatty acids. Now, mind you, you can get these from fish oil. You can get them from flaxseed oil. They're both beneficial. This is from the Journal of the American Medical Association's Neurology. In the journal's article, they report that those who consumed the highest levels of the omega-3 fatty acids had a, quote, dramatically reduced risk of developing ALS, or Lou Gehrig's disease, in a meta-analysis of 5 large studies. The researchers analyzed the diets of over 1 million participants for a period of up to 24 years. And during this time, 995 individuals were detected with ALS. What they found was that the omega-3 fatty acids have been shown to reduce inflammation and oxidative stress on the cells, and both of those processes damage nerve tissue and have been linked with ALS. Quote from the study, individuals with higher dietary intakes of total omega-3 fatty acids had a reduced risk for ALS. So, and how much? It was a 20% reduction, so that's a big deal. So, to help those with ALS, Parkinson's, dementia, Alzheimer's, omega-3 fatty acids. Vitamin D boosts survival rates of colon cancer patients. This is from the Journal of Clinical Oncology. They found that colon cancer patients with the highest levels of vitamin D in their blood had half the risk of dying when compared with patients with the lowest levels. And this is from the Medical Research Council, Human Genetics Unit, University of Edinburgh. So, and this was published in the Journal of Clinical Oncology. So the takeaway message is, if you're a person suffering with cancer, 5,000 units a day of vitamin D. If you're a regular person, 3,000 units would be fine. Also, one of the benefits of fiber, and we recently had a retreat, and one of the persons there was from South Africa, and she said that she had been chronically constipated for 5 years, so much so that she could only relieve herself with a laxative, and then it was every several days. Within 2 days of being on a high-fiber program, about 50 grams of mixed fibers a day, she said for the first time in years she was regular and she felt great because of it. And she simply got better. But I heard that from many people about how the high fiber cleanses. It sure does. This is from the British Medical Journal. An article just published shows that an increase in the number of years lived by heart attack survivors who consume a greater amount of fiber. This was done at Harvard School of Public Health. They looked at 1,840 men enrolled in the health professional follow-up study and 2,258 women from the nurses' health study. And they found that if you've had a heart attack and you have a high-fiber diet, you have a substantial increase in lifespan compared to those who don't. In fact, you have a 25% lower risk of dying from any cause in comparison with those whose intake of fiber was lower. So, the takeaway message, high fiber lessens your risk of heart disease and lengthens your lifespan. Also, low bone mineral density, that's what happens after the age of about 40. Your bones begin to thin because you're not eating enough of those green vegetables and seaweeds, which are very rich, along with tahini, sesame seeds, in calcium, magnesium, or you're not taking your supplements. Now, the ideal supplement would be to have a supplement that has calcium and magnesium from citrate, boron, manganese, phosphorus. I would also use the omega-3 fatty acids, vitamin D, vitamin K, vitamin C. Then you have the ideal. And that will help remineralize your bones. But if you don't have strong bones, if they're not really mineralized, then you end up with a greater risk of heart disease. They studied 13,000 individuals. They saw a 23% drop in heart failure risk with every one standard deviation rise in what is called BUA, even after adjusting for all other activities. Quote, our findings give support for cardiac assessment in people with reduced bone mineral density and warrant further exploration. So what it means is you got thin bones, you have a greater risk of heart attack. All right, so make sure you're getting it. And to help you with our osteoarthritis pain, according to the Annals of Rheumatic Disease, the omega-3 fatty acids again. So another good study. Also, lycopene supplementation aids blood vessel function in heart disease patients. We have tens of millions of heart disease patients. This is in PLOS One Medical Journal. They report a benefit from, well, lycopene in the improving the endothelial function in cardiac disease. This was a double-blind trial, and they found that 7 milligrams of oral lycopene or a placebo daily for 2 months and made a big difference. In fact, it improved vasodilation, the ability of your arteries to open up and let blood through, and with that blood comes oxygen and nutrients, 53% improvement. So that's a big deal. So if you want to live a longer life, tomatoes, watermelon, strawberries, plums, red plums, raspberries, cherries, they're all red, and the lycopene helps you. From the Cancer Epidemiology Biomarkers Review, a study that shows that low-dose aspirin is associated with pancreatic cancer risk reduction. But I'm opposed to that. I'll tell you why. I certainly want to see anyone who has pancreatic cancer have reduced incident. But here's what they don't tell you. Yes, it will thin the blood, but it also destroys folic acid, B6, B12, which are necessary for you to be able to have good quality homocysteine levels. So where you can thin the blood so you're not having a stroke, you actually increase homocysteine, which can end up harming the heart. And therefore, you increase heart attacks. Doesn't make any sense. Also, from PLOS Genetics, they found that from Duke University, they could allow a longer lifespan, in this case in a particular type of roundworm, if they restricted calories. Now, what does this mean? It means that we're overeating. We're eating too many calories per meal. We're stuffing ourselves with empty calories. So if you eat high fiber, eat lots of vegetables and salad greens, eat your citrus fruit, you're going to have low calories. But good nutrition means you will live a longer life. And cognitive function is improved with vitamin B supplementation in those with elevated homocysteine. This is from Nutritional Neuroscience and reported the findings of a clinical trial of middle-aged and older men and women who experience a reduction in homocysteine and better cognition by having a B complex. It doesn't take a lot, 10 milligrams or more B6. I would say 500 micrograms of B12, 500 micrograms of folate would make an enormous difference, and that could help prevent a heart attack and bad cognition. And for those of you who have Parkinson's or know someone who does, from the Journal of Neuroimmune Pharmacology, shows that cinnamon could be used by Parkinson's patients to prevent the disease from progressing. From the Rush University Medical Center, they studied the effects of the spice in this mouse model, Parkinson's. They found that when cinnamon is metabolized into sodium benzoate in the blood and brain, the loss of beneficial proteins known as parkin and DJ1 are halted, while neurons that produce dopamine, a neurotransmitter that is reduced in Parkinson's, were protected. And motor function, which can be significantly impaired by the disease, was improved. So, the takeaway message: why don't we just all start using a little bit of cinnamon every day in our smoothies or hot cereal, because it could be protecting your brain. That's the latest on health and nutrition and inside information. And now I want to share some additional things with you. Oh, there is one more thing. Curcumin, an important study. This is from Case Western Reserve University. Now, we know that curcumin comes from turmeric, a very common Asian spice. And there are thousands of studies showing how powerful the spice is with a variety of diseases, not the least of which is cancer. In this case, they found that curcumin was able to impact the progression of mesothelioma, that's a cancer of the lung linings, often linked to asbestos. And they demonstrated that the application of curcumin, cures, C-U-R, cumin, C-U-M-I-N, curcumin, a derivative of the spice turmeric, has strong cancer-inhibiting peptides, increase the level of a protein inhibitor known to protect the progression of this cancer. This was published in Clinical Cancer Research. So get your curcuminoids. If you have cancer, it could save your life. Now, something important, something the pharmaceutical industry does not want you to know. And we want to thank Bill Falloon at Life Extension for uncovering this. Congratulations, Bill. As always, you're out in the lead on all these major issues. So we commend you. Celebrex, 100 milligrams. You pay $130. What is the cost of the active ingredient? 60 cents. That is a huge markup. That is 21,712% markup. Claritin, 10 milligrams. You pay $215. The cost of the general active ingredients, 71 cents. And Keflix, 250 milligrams, you pay $157. Their active general cost is $1.88. Lipitor, 20 milligrams, you pay $272. The cost of the general active ingredient, $5.80. What is their markup? 4,696%. Norvasc, 10 milligrams, you pay $188. Their cost is 14 cents. Again, you pay $188. Their active ingredient cost is 14 cents. They present their markup 134,493%. Paxil, which I don't believe anyone should ever take, 20 milligrams. You pay $220 for 100 tablets. The cost of general active ingredient is $7.60. Prevacid, 30 milligrams, you pay $44. Their cost is $1. Prilosec, 20 milligrams, your cost is $360. Their cost is 52 cents for the general active ingredients. They make a 69,417% markup. Prozac, that I don't believe anybody should ever use, 20 milligrams. You pay $247. Their cost is 11 cents. Let me repeat that. Prozac, 20 milligrams, $247. The cost of the general active ingredients, 11 cents. 224,973% markup. Then you have Tenormin, 50 milligrams, $104. Their cost, 13 cents for the active ingredients, 80,362% markup. Vasotec, 10 milligrams, $102. They pay 20 cents. That's 51,158% markup. Xanax, 1 milligram. Their cost is your cost is $136. Theirs is, you ready for this? 2 cents. 2 pennies. But you are charged $136. Their active ingredients are 2 pennies. The markup, 569,958%. Zestril, 20 milligrams. Your cost, $89. Theirs, $320. Let's see what else. And Zocar, 40 milligrams. Their cost, your cost, $350. Theirs, $8. And Zoloft, your cost, $206. Theirs, $1.75 for the active ingredients, 11,821%. So keep this in mind. It is extraordinarily profitable to get you on medication for the pharmaceutical company. And when you realize that they managed to get laws passed that prevent the federal agencies, including Medicare at the federal level and Medicaid at state level and the VA, from negotiating for the best generic brand prices, even if you assume that every one of these you needed, which you don't, it would save huge amounts. It would save over $100 billion a year. But their lobbyists showed that that's not the case. And don't let them fool you for a moment. They put a lot of money into research. They don't. They make a lot of profit. Let's take you to a town in California. Do you remember I said that in my travels across the United States, I would sometimes drive, let's say driving from up in Wyoming, through Colorado and Utah, you would see miles and miles of farms, many of them with for sale signs. And when you stop and speak with people, they're open, they're honest, and they'll tell you they don't have the water. As a result, they can't irrigate anything, and they don't have it for human consumption, let alone animals. And so you see a lot of carcasses out there. Let's take you on a tour through Julia Laurie of Mother Jones. Quote, glance at the lawn in East Portersville, California, and you instantly know something about the people who live in the house attached to it. If a lawn is green, the house has running water. If it's brown, or if the yard contains plastic water tanks or crates of bottled water, then the well has gone dry. Residents of these homes rely upon deliveries of bottled water, or perhaps those connected to a working well of a friendly neighbor. They take showers with water from a bucket. They use paper plates to avoid washing dishes, eat sandwiches instead of spaghetti so there's no need to boil water, and collect water used for cooking and showers to pour in the toilet or on the trees outside. East Porterville is in Tulare County, a region in the middle of California's agricultural heavy Central Valley that's been especially hard hit by the state's historic drought. More than 7,000 people in the county lack running water, and three-quarters of them live in East Portersville. The community doesn't have a public water system. Instead, residents rely upon private wells. But after years of drought, the nearby Tule River has diminished to a trickle, and the underground water table has sunk as more and more farmers rely on groundwater. Last week, I spent a few days interviewing residents in the town, also known as Ground Zero of the drought. Like many small towns in the Central Valley, East Portersville is home to the pickers and packers of the fruits and veggies and nuts grown nearby and distributed across the country. Many are poor. More than half of kids growing up in East Portersville fall below the poverty line. And throughout the town are the detailed signs of rural poverty. Dog guards, run-down trailers, roads of uneven pavement devolve into dirt without warning. The air is hazy with dust from the fields and roads. It clings to the tables and chairs and boxes of bottled water left outside. It collects between the fingers and the toes, turning the shower water a cloudy brown. Everyone coughs. Asthmatics end up in the emergency room. Among the first to report a dry well was Donna Johnson, a 70-year-old retired recreational therapist who lives in East Portersville with her husband, Howard, and a handful of rescue dogs. In the spring of 2014, she turned on the tap to find that it had reduced to a dribble, then no water at all. Howard tried to extend the pump further into the well, but where there should have been a splash of water, there was simply a thud of solid against solid. When Johnson called a well driller and learned the company had a long waiting list, she started wondering just how many wells had gone dry. After a couple of weeks of knocking on the doors of strangers in the neighborhood, she had a list of more than 100 homes, all dry. Over the past 18 months, Johnson has become known as East Porterville's Water Lady, as she spends her days collecting donations of water and paper goods and delivering them in a pickup truck to a list of homes with dry wells, a list that's expanded to hundreds of addresses. There's always somebody calling saying, "I don't have water," she said. The county, in part prompted by Johnson's discovery, has also stepped in. Locals can now bathe in portable showers outside the Drought Resources Center, which is a trailer set up in a church parking lot, and sign up for bottled water deliveries. By the way, you get two quarts of water per person per day. That's it, 2 quarts. Tanks of non-potable water, meaning you couldn't drink it, sit outside fire station. In the evenings, residents fill up the barrels for things like laundry and bathing. As an interim solution, the county is installing large plastic tanks of water connected to some dry homes, but progress has been slow. So far, 320 tanks have been installed, 1,300 still remain dry. It doesn't help matters that homes in directly adjacent, slightly wealthier town of Portersville have running water from the town's municipal water system. Perhaps the most glaring example of this is on the city boundary. Locals take showers at Iglesia Emmanuel in East Porterville, directly across the street, is a patch of green golf course. East Porterville residents without running water have fallen into the tedious routine. A Garcia, 49-year-old mother of five, lost water 2 years ago. In some ways, her living conditions remind her of those who left behind in Mexico when she moved to East Porterville in 1988. The change has been particularly challenging because she suffers from lupus and arthritis, making it difficult to haul water to her home or make the trek to the public showers. And so it goes. And this is with routine temperatures above 100 degrees. And so everything is an issue. Now, that's one town. Another town has 12,000 residents, no water. There's a very upscale community of 13,000 people in million-dollar-plus homes, and they're running out of water. In fact, 80% of the state of California is running out of water. And yet, there has been a notice by the governor, which is good, to conserve 25%. They're going to have to conserve 50%, and they're going to have all of the people in the state, including agriculture and hydrofracking, also conserve water. Thus far, they're exempt. The people are not. They have to abide, but they're not the biggest users. Big agra and the hydrofracking are the biggest users of the water, and cattle are the biggest of those. So imagine how much better it would be for the people living in the drought area if you gave up meat, all dairy, things that require an animal, and all that water that the animal has to take in. Now, a lot of us are concerned that we're at a time in our life where we have to look at, is anything really changing in America? And the answer is yes and no. For those of us who are trying to find positive solutions to all of our many crises, first we have to be open and honest about understanding the crisis. Step back from it. Don't personalize it all the time. Don't emote about everything. And instead just look and say, how big is this problem? How is it spreading? What is the likely outcome if I don't do anything? And then decide what you can do, and then become proactive in aligning yourself with people who can support you and resources that can help you make the changes you need to make on a personal level. So then you're one less person on the grid of disaster. You've gotten off. And the more you do that, the more you're going to inspire other people, or you will meet other people who are themselves doing something positive. But then there is the great majority who are doing nothing. I mean, when I say nothing, I mean nothing. To give you an example, in Texas, we did an actual survey I wanted to see, and our research showed that there are 6.2 million people living in Texas who are either running out of water now or will be completely out of water within the next 12 to 16 months. 1,221 communities, that's just in Texas. All told, there's more than 9,000 communities just in the Southwest who are running out or out of water. But they're not making changes. They're kind of waiting for something else to happen. Well, it's like waiting for Katrina, waiting for Hurricane Sandy, waiting for the big one. Why? Let's become proactive. Now, that's just on one level. That's just on the environmental level. What about the political level? What about all the other ways that we're dealing with life? According to Chris Hedges, if you're not dedicated to the destruction of empire and the dismantling of American militarism, then you cannot count yourself as a member of the left. And by the way, this is not a side issue. It is the issue. And it's why Chris Hedges refuses to pass giving a judgment on behalf of presidential candidate Bernie Sanders. Why? I'm going to do a whole special on this next week, a whole history of the good things Bernie Sanders has stood for and aligned himself with, where he should be commended, and those that he has been on the wrong side of history and human rights, and which he should be challenged on. And he is a master of obfuscation, where he has kept what he has been, what could be a dark mark on him, out of the discussion thus far. For example, and I'll give you some examples, Bernie Sanders refused to confront the war industry or the crimes of empire, including U.S. support for the slow genocide carried out by Israel against the Palestinians. There will be no genuine democratic, social, economic, or political reform until, according to Chris Hedges, you destroy our permanent war machine. Now, let's think about that for a moment. Militarists and war profiteers are our greatest enemy. They use fear, bolstered by racism, as a tool in their efforts to abolish civil liberties, crush dissent, and ultimately extinguish democracy. To produce weapons and finance military expansion, they ruin the domestic economy by diverting resources and scientific and technological expertise and a disproportionate share of government funds. They use the military to carry out futile, decades-long wars to enrich corporations like Lockheed Martin, General Dynamics, Raytheon, and Northrop Grumman. War is a business, and when the generals retire, where do you think they go to work? They go to work for these war machines. Profits swell. War never stops. Whole sections of the earth live in terror, and our nation is disemboweled and left to live under what the political philosopher Sheldon Wolin calls inverted totalitarianism. Libertarians seem to get this. It's time the left woke up. Who was it? It was Rosa Luxemburg who wrote, "Bourgeois society faces a dilemma, either a transition to socialism or a return to barbarism. We face the choice, either the victory of imperialism and the decline of our culture as in ancient Rome, annihilation, devastation, degeneration, a yawning graveyard, or the victory of socialism, the victory of the international working class consciously assaulting imperialism and its method. War. This is the dilemma of world history. Either die, or you'll be cast by the middle conscious proletariat." End quote. Now, the U.S. military and its array of civilian contractors operate as enforcers and hired killers across the globe by corporations, many of which pay no taxes. Young men and women, many unable to find work, are the cannon fodder. The U.S. military has served as the handmaiden of capitalism since it committed genocide against Native Americans, carried out on behalf of land speculators and mineral companies and timber merchants and railroads. The military replicated this indiscriminate slaughter at the end of the 19th century in our imperial expansion in Cuba and elsewhere in the Caribbean, in Central America, and especially in the Philippines. Military muscle exists to permit global corporations to expand markets and plunder oil, minerals, and other natural resources while keeping subjugated populations impoverished by corrupt and brutal puppet regimes. The masters of war are the scum of the earth. It was the war profiteers and the military, as Seymour Melman has pointed out, that conspired after World War II to keep the country in a state of total war, deforming the economy to continue to produce massive amounts of weapons and armaments in peacetime. The permanent war economy is sustained through fear-mongering about communists during the Cold War and about Islamic jihadists today. And such fear-mongering is used not only to justify crippling military expenditures, but to crush internal dissent. The corporatists in the military, which have successfully carried out what John Ralston Saul calls a coup d'etat in slow motion, have used their political and economic clout to dismantle programs and policies put in place under the New Deal. Brian Waddell writes on this process. He said, quote, "The requirements of total war revive corporate political leverage, allowing corporate executives inside and outside the state extension influence over wartime mobilization policies. Assertive corporate executives and military officials formed a very effective wartime alliance that not only blocked any augmentation of the New Dealer authority, but also organized a powerful alternative to the New Deal. International activism displaced and supplanted New Deal domestic activism. Thus was the stage finally set for a vastly extended and much more powerful and formal U.S. empire outside its own hemisphere," end quote. The war machine is not, and almost never has been, a force for liberty or democracy. It does not make us safe. It does not make the world safe. And its immense economic and political power internally, including its management of the security and surveillance state and its huge defense contracts, has turned it into the most dangerous institution in America. Military expenditures bleed the federal budget officially, $595.4 billion a year, or 53% of all spending. This does not, however, include veterans' benefits of $65 billion a year or hidden costs in other budgets that see the military and the war profiteers take as much as $1.6 trillion a year out of the pockets of taxpayers. The working the middle class fund the endless wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Somalia, Yemen, and a host of other countries while suffering crippling austerity programs, a massive debt peonage, and collapsing infrastructures, and chronic underemployment, and unemployment mounting internal repression. The war industry is feeding off the carcass of the state grows fat and powerful with profits. Now, this is not unique. It is how all empires are hollowed out from the inside, as we are impoverished and stripped of our rights and the tools used to maintain control on the outer reaches of empire. Drones, militarized police, indiscriminate violence, a loss of civil liberties, and the security and surveillance, all are used against us. We have devolved, because of the poison of empire, into a third world nation with nukes. We are ruled by an omnipotent corporate oligarchy and their Praetorian Guard. The political class, Republican and Democrat, dances to the tune played by these oligarchs and militarists and mouth the words they want to say. C. Wright Mills in The Power Elite warns of a military machine that not only holds a political and economic life of the nation hostage, but also has the ability to form public opinion. The Pentagon spends $4.7 billion a year and has 27,000 full-time employees working in recruitment, advertising, and psychological operations and public relations. That's according to a Associated Press report. But millions of dollars more for propaganda are hidden within classified budgets. The Pentagon places its commentators and pundits on the airwaves, produces its news stories for the press, has ubiquitous advertising, runs junkets for Wall Street and capitalists, elected officials, and manages how Hollywood and television portray war and military. The naked greed and violence that define empire, understood by writers such as Joseph Conrad and others, masked within empire behind the cant of patriotism and nationalism, which sanctifies self-exaltation and racism. Imperial war is transformed through the magic of propaganda into glorious spectacle. So, the hyper-masculinity of the military, celebrated by Hollywood and the media, is seductive to an underclass trapped in menial, dead-end jobs. Empires feed like vultures on these pools of frustrated surplus labor. They manipulate their feelings of powerlessness. This is why capitalists create pools of surplus labor. Those who are desperate to secure a place in society are easy fodder for the military and ready candidates for underpaid jobs without benefits or job security. Our corporate neo-feudal society is by designs. The sons and daughters of the elites rarely serve in the military. The military, even at the service academy such as West Point, attracts those who have been cast aside by neoliberalism. Often before joining the military, they lack a clearly defined identity or sense of purpose. They are terrified of being pushed permanently into the underclass. They are especially susceptible to indoctrination. The military teaches soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines not to think, not to challenge assumptions and structures, but to obey and be tough and strong. This hyper-masculine culture glorifies the state and state violence. It renders all human beings outside the sacred national circle as objects to control or exploit. It creates a binary world of good and evil. It sanctifies violence, especially male violence. It is why rape is endemic in the military. It is why pornography and violence against women are so pervasive in the culture. Tenderness, nurturing, and empathy, along with intellectual inquiry and artistic expression, are banished. The weak and the vulnerable deserve to be cast aside. Our enemies deserve to be killed. It is the culture of death, and we drink deep from this dark elixir. Back in a moment. Please stay with us, and time for feedback. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888.
Any day now, I will hear you say goodbye, my love, and you'll be on your way. Then, my wild, beautiful bird, you will have flown. Oh, any day now, I'll be all alone. Oh, any day now, when your restless eyes,
I'd like to welcome all of you. Within the next 2 days, I will be doing a special in-depth original investigative report on Monsanto and the documents that should challenge them and cause multiple class action lawsuits, and you will have original quotable comments on Monsanto and the documents that they have been holding. Now, on my next program, which will be following our regular scheduled program today, I will be a guest with a scientist, the scientist who originally broke this information on my show last week. And that will be on the Progressive Radio Network. And that follows this one. You can listen to it only over the internet. And that will be Dr. Anthony Samsel, an independent research scientist who managed to get hands on over 13,000 documents that revealed the truth about the safety of genetically engineered materials. We're going to take some calls in a moment. And I'm going to read you a letter from a 16-year-old about Gardasil, destroyed and abandoned, from Sanvax. But first, I want to let you know that after 5 months of being out, I just brought it out to test it, to see what would be the interest in a product that contained everything. If you ever had to have one food source, you had nothing else. There was an emergency, a solar storm, hurricane, flooding. You're going on a trip, and you had to have one single form of food. So I put together what I consider the best mixture of everything you could possibly have in your body, and it's a big container. It's a gallon, and I put in split pea protein and brown rice protein. I put in alfalfa and pumpkin seeds and flax seeds, barley grass and carrots, kale and cauliflower, cabbage and parsley, ginger, spinach, celery, broccoli. I put in there asparagus, color greens, apples and bananas and cranberries and strawberries, chlorella and spirulina, blueberries, blackberries, raspberries, kamut, oats, sprouted quinoa, kamut, and spelt, and amaranth, oat beta-glucan, chia seeds, alaria, dulse, laminaria, five types of seaweed, a whole blend of enzymes, protease, amylase, lipase, cellulase, papain, and bromelain, 8 billion healthy non-dairy probiotics, and sweetened with stevia, has a natural pineapple and cherry flavor, and that's it. Nothing else is in there. It's called Survival Stuff. You're getting 17 grams of high-quality plant protein. You're getting 15 grams per serving of high-quality fiber. There's nothing else like it anywhere. And mind you, this is not a small container. This is a huge gallon container. So we now have it back as of today in inventory. We had so many issues, and the reason it took so long is because I'm responsible, because I won't take out any of the ingredients, and they have to go find these ingredients. And if there's one ingredient missing, even though 40 are there, they can't put it in production until all 40 ingredients, or however many are in the product, are there. So we finally get all the ingredients. And I don't know of any more powerful, potent, nutritious, delicious, body needed nutrition you could possibly have. Everybody should have 4 or 5 of these in storage. They last a long time in case you ever need them. And I always travel, and I have bags, and I put this in it, travel with me. I've been out of it myself for 6 months. So needless to say, I'm getting myself a bunch of these and keep my apartment in New York and my home. This way, if I ever need it, it's called Survival Stuff. All right. And there's just nothing like it. It's now back in stock. So you can get whatever you need, and I'll give you a phone number to call and say, here's the number you call and get your survival stuff. Mind you, this is huge. It's a gallon. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. And after 6 months, almost, it's back in inventory. In fact, I was so concerned, I had another company make up an extra 1,000 jars just so I don't run out again. So that's it. Survival Stuff's back. Also, Muscle Stuff is back. And Power Berry Blast are all back. Everything is back. That's good. If you've just joined us, I'm Gary Noll. Nice to have you with us. Let's say hello to Harvey from Berkeley, California. Hi, Harvey. Your turn.
Thank you, Gary. Well, I'd like to continue on and talk about the water situation. Here in California, we're experiencing our fourth year of severe drought. And by 2030, water demand is expected to exceed current supply by 40%. And that's according to the World Resource Group, an arm of the World Bank. And it turns out that the fossil fuel industry, especially the old-fashioned water boiling technology that's used in coal-fired, oil-fired, methane, and nuclear power plants, is second only to agriculture in their daily use of America's freshwater resources. And at the same time, once manufactured and installed, solar panels use virtually no water over the 20 to 25-year warranted lifetime. Additionally, how about charging the water in the fossil fuel industry for the drilling, the water they use in the drilling, the hydraulic fracturing, the mining, the refining, the transportation, the storage, the guarding, the disposal of toxic waste, and the building and decommissioning of power plants. That takes a lot of water. And I would call for a solar water credit for people who install solar panels on the rooftop. And if you think about the amount of water they save over the 20 to 25 years that they're producing electricity without using any water. And also it takes about 100 gallons of water to make refine 1 gallon of gasoline. So if you plug your electric car into your solar rooftop, you'd be charging your car with solar electrons instead of Chevron. And that would make a big difference all around. I think that's the patriotic thing to do if we're going to save water, is to go with the new technology. And the new technology says that we don't use water in the generation of electricity. There's, of course, solar panels, that's photovoltaics, that's light to electricity. But then there's others. Some of my favorites are thermoelectric, T-H-E-R-M-O electric, thermoelectric, that's heat to electricity. Solid state doesn't use water. Piezoelectric, that's spelled P-I-E-Z-O-E-L-E-C-T-R-I-C. Piezoelectric, that's pressure to electricity, doesn't use water. And here's a new one, triboelectricity, T-R-I-B-O, electricity. And triboelectricity is friction to electricity, like when you walk on a carpet and your shoes, you build up static electricity, then you touch something and you get a spark. Well, that could be harvested in many ways. So none of these things require water. And now that we have off-the-shelf technology that, especially in solar, is just going down in price and the availability is tremendous. So I think that it really is time to get star-powered. Let's get solar, especially to save our precious freshwater resources.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much, Harvey, from Berkeley, California. And now let's say hello to Gordon from Montauk Point. Hi, Gordon, your turn.
Hey, thank you very much, Gary. And extrapolating on Harvey, how articulate, what a compliment to you, Gary, your audience. And you spoke in the past about how we can sort of pressure these politicians that are pro what Harvey was talking about, and how do we find out about where our Congress people are. I'm originally up in Queens, and I politely on C-SPAN confronted my Congressman Joe Crowley as being the number one recipient of lobbyist money, number one recipient of pork barrel. Our neighbor in Garden City, Carolyn McCarthy, cited her reason for not running for re-election of Congress. Her husband was killed 20 years ago on the Long Island Railroad in a shooting, is the dysfunctional U.S. Congress and its inability to get anything done. And I know next week you're going to be talking about Bernie Sanders, but they are the one thing they don't want is pressure from us, the voters. How do we find out about where these people are in their secretive ways? Thank you, Gary.
Okay, I appreciate that, Gordon. What we'll be doing starting in about a month is every month we will set aside on our Progressive Commentary Hour, individuals who will give you a report card on those who are supporting good legislation and those who are supporting industry-sponsored legislation. And this will be posted so you could go at any given time and see the legislation, who gave money for it, who's backing it, what are their motives, at least to the degree that they could be determined by who financed it or who lobbied on behalf of it. And everything that ALEKS, the American Legislative Exchange Council, is behind, we're against. So we'll also keep you up to date on that. Now, I want to share something with you based upon what I considered some very unfortunate comments by Bill O'Reilly and the people who may be well-meaning. I can't judge a person's ulterior motive, but I can certainly judge what they say, thinking that, you know, if you are a single black person, you're automatically at risk of having a dysfunctional family or kids going to end up on drugs. And nothing could be further from the truth. I happen to know a lot of single parents, including those who are minorities, and I find both the parent and their children to be as spiritual and constructive in their life as anyone would be from any race or any background. So there has been this stigmatizing of people, and especially African Americans and Latinos, and especially if they are single. So I want to play you something. This is from minority children telling you what it means to be in a black family. Most of these are from single parents, where the kid is telling you the sacrifice the parent made on their behalf. And here's the story that Bill O'Reilly and others don't tell you.
Like 6 months ago, and I haven't seen my parents since, so it's a little much.
My mother used to be a dancer, and when she had her first child, she was 21 years old. She was the right size to be a dancer. just like perfect, had a lot of good things going for her. She decided to leave behind her life of dancing to be able to take care of my oldest brother.
When I was like around elementary school, I remember for 2 months we didn't have electricity. She bought a cooler and she would like take sandwiches from work for me and my brother to eat. I remember me coming home early and seeing her eating ice and with like me and my brother's sandwiches in there. I wish like I offered her my sandwich. I don't know what I was thinking.
My dad, he didn't live with us, but he always made sure to be there, always. If I had a baseball game, if I had a basketball game, if I had a play, if I was at church doing something, he was there. He made sure to be there. If I ever needed him for anything, he would be at my house in a half hour.
My mom sacrificed a healthy work life so that I could get a better education at a school that she wouldn't have otherwise been able to afford. Little did I know, she was working with a bunch of women who were very catty and totally just disregarded her and her feelings. They were very disrespectful to her, and she was the only black woman in her office. She recently told me that she would throw up throughout the day. She had so much anxiety and she just didn't want to be there, but she still soldiered through. And you know, I would go visit her at the end of the school day and she would have a smile on her face, and little did I know, she felt like she was trapped.
So my mom sacrificed finding love and being with someone to make sure that me and my siblings had everything. My brother, who's the last one, just turned 18. And she was saying that, like, she's like, I didn't date all of these years after my parents got divorced, because she was like, I want to make sure that I'm there for you all, and I didn't want to seem like a distant parent. I wanted my attention to be 110%.
She worked this one job, but she had to work it like all the time. I never got to see her. She used to build the nose on the airplane for Boeing. She couldn't make it to the sports games and stuff like that. She couldn't make it to the open house when, you know, the teacher wanted to talk.
When it was time for me and one of my sisters to go to college and coming out of retirement, in order for him to take a job at Howard University for us to be able to go to school and have our tuition covered. I'm sorry, I admit it.
Mom, Dad,
Mom.
Pops, sweetie, that's what I call y'all.
My mom never heard me say this, so I'll just say it. Look.
I just want to say thank you for giving up sleep for me. Thank you for giving up finding love for me.
I remember you going to sleep and you asked us not to bother you, and I didn't understand why you didn't want any of my attention and none of that stuff, but I'm 30 years old now and I understand.
I realize now that your sacrifices were decisions that once you made them, there was no turning back. They were decisions that once you made them, it was truly a commitment to choose us over yourself.
Thank you for staying together. Thank you for giving up your skating and dancing dreams.
Without your guidance, without your discipline, I would have ended up on so many roads and paths, and who knows where I would have been.
You are literally my lifeline. If you're napping, you answer the phone and you just want to make sure that I'm okay. I'm grown, I'm not a child, and you don't have to do that, but it's still in your heart to want to make sure that your only daughter is in one piece.
It's kind of taught me to be a lot more selfless, and I hope to be just as selfless as you are.
When the time comes, I'll have to hold that torch. I'm gonna make you proud because I have an example of what to do.
I love you so much, and I don't say it enough to you, but I love you so much.
There's always more to the story than what we're told. It's unfortunate people's biases, their prejudices, not allow them to detach enough to step back and take an honest look at life, people. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more on our next program. And tonight on the Progressive Commentary Hour, we're going to have such a powerful program. We're going to have some people who are going to give you a perspective on 9/11 you have not heard. We're going to have John Perkins and Lance DeHaven Smith on. So it's 7 p.m., Progressive Commentary Hour. And I'm going to be back in 1 minute over the Progressive Radio Network for Utrecht Lead Show to talk about Monsanto. Have a nice day, everyone. Mm-hmm.